Hey everyone, good morning. Welcome to Daily Drop-In, our morning show that happens every single morning, Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. Eastern. We are streaming currently on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or Twitch live. However, if you're watching this after the fact, we appreciate you subscribing, liking, reviewing the Teach Bear Talk podcast. I am joined this morning by Stephen Weber. We have so much to talk about. You guys know that I've been talking about how excited I am that Stephen is joining us. So we have a whole lot to get into. We also have some wonderful celebrations going on in the world that we will be able to celebrate in addition to our conversation that we're going to continue to have all week long on equity and inclusion. We will obviously also end, because it is Wednesday, September 15th, we'll be ending with a recommendation for all of you to continue to explore other resources that we feel are wonderful to add to your collection. So we'll be right back. Please go fill up your coffee and we'll get into the show. Good morning. Good morning, Stephen. It's so good to see you. How has your morning been so far?
Good morning. Everything's going great.
I'm thrilled that you've been able to join us. I was telling our audience over the last few days how eager I was to have you on the show, because I have been a consumer of your content. I have been a fan of yours for a long time. It's like really, truly meaningful to me to meet you in person.
Thank you so much. I feel the same way about you.
So for those of people who may be tuning in, maybe for the first time connecting with the Teach Better team, or maybe they interact with the team in multiple ways, but don't necessarily pop over to our blog as often as they could, would you mind kind of sharing who you are, what you do in education, and anything else that you're willing to provide us with a little bit of an introduction?
Yes. As you mentioned earlier, I'm Stephen Weber and I work with Fayetteville Public Schools. I'm the Associate Superintendent for Teaching and Learning. We have 16 schools and over 10,000 students. We're located in Northwest Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Prior to this, I've worked in two state departments of education in North Carolina and Arkansas as a social studies coordinator. I've also been an assistant principal, classroom teacher. I was a fifth and sixth grade social studies teacher, and I've had several jobs in education. I started out as an edu blogger in 2008, just kind of started my own blog using Weebly, and didn't have a lot of people hitting that site. It was hard to find. And then ASCD Edge came out with their own blogging platform, similar to what I'm doing now with Teach Better. And in about 2016, their blogging platform went away. And there for a few years, I just didn't really have anywhere to post blogs. And when I found Teach Better, I didn't know if my blogs would really fit, because I thought, well, I'm an assistant superintendent. I write on leadership and instructional strategies and curriculum design, but sometimes I don't necessarily write directly to teachers. And so I thought Teach Better is more for teachers. I don't want to jump in on this side and take away from the great work that teachers are doing as bloggers. And I found that there was an opportunity for my type of writing on Teach Better. And so over the past 12 months, I've been posting on Teach Better, and it just gives me a lot of pride when a superintendent or a principal or a teacher says, we used your blog in our back-to-school faculty meeting, or we used your blog for a after-school meeting, and it really helped us move from where we were to where we were trying to go as a district. So that's the big thing I get out of being a blogger for Teach Better, is knowing that it's helping people, even people I've never met in other school districts.
Yeah. And Stephen, I want to emphasize a very important point you made of the audience in which you write to. I think it's such a wonderful opportunity that we have to be able to provide you with a platform to share your expertise, your reflection, your suggestions. Yes, of course, the Teach Better team does support teachers, but we also support all educators in the entire school ecosystem. And we were eager. I remember vividly the first time you published on our site. We were eager to find leadership and incredible education leaders to say, hey, we want to write to the audience as well. And so you are one of our first key bloggers that we've had over the last few years that has said, yes, I'm going to really support on leadership and strategic thinking outside of the classroom. And you've been able to provide not only so much insight, but also inspire other authors that now are able to write to other audiences as well. So it is so, so neat to have you here. And I know a lot of people are appreciating the content that you're pushing out. We have a little bit of a tradition here that we start with a morning cheers. So for any of you listening, good morning. We're thrilled that you're here. We hope that you're all enjoying your morning coffee. You know, Stephen, I don't even know, how did you get connected to the team? Like, I'm very aware that you've been able to provide so much insight, but did you just stumble across the website? Do you remember how you got connected?
Dr. Neil Gupta is a good friend of mine, and he's a blogger, and he's one of the consultants with Teach Better. And he informed me, hey, there's this site over here, and I know you like to write. You might want to consider checking out this site. So he connected me.
Oh, what an awesome connection. We love Dr. Neil Gupta. He's actually been on the Daily Drop-In before, a few weeks ago, and numerous times in the past. So he is a wonderful voice. And as you mentioned, a part of the Teach Better Team Speakers Network. So for any of you listening, if you want to go check out all the work that Neil's doing, one of the many locations you can go is teachbetter.com/speakers network. Go figure. What a good guy to have in common, yeah. Truly.
Yes. When people talk about being a connected educator, that's kind of a concept to some people that's just hard to understand. But once you become a connected educator, it's people like Neil who have influenced me. And so Neil and I are connected on Voxer. And when I have a question about education, I can reach out to him. We're also connected in another group that has multiple educators. And then we have a third group that has Dr. Sinead Bell in Texas and Neil and myself. So we're in three Voxer groups. And at any point during the day, if I have a question about education, I can reach out to educators in other states. And I feel like Teach Better does the same thing for me. It helps me connect with new educators who I have never met in person at a conference, but I'm able to share ideas and resources. But Neil is a great part of my professional learning network.
And I love that you're using a platform like Voxer to be able to connect. You know, for those of you who may not be using Voxer, it's something that I know the team uses very often for our subgroups that exist in our family. But what a great opportunity that you have to not only kind of like text back and forth and messaging, but truly share your voice. It's such a different environment when you're able to discuss through audio conversations. And I think it's incredible that you've not only chosen to connect one-on-one, but connect with groups of educators, whether they be small or large, to have those conversations. It's kind of like what we do for our brainstorm bank in some capacity, where we open up the conversation to say, does anyone need anything? Share your questions. Let's brainstorm together. Yes. I'm sure it's very similar to what you're doing in Voxer.
Yes. And you can definitely get pushback. People can say, hey, you don't need to do that. If you're about to speak at a board presentation or you're about to lead a principal meeting, someone can say, here's a strategy I used, or here's an activity I used with principals at our back to school retreat. And so you're able to really connect. And quite often when you hit a home run with that activity, you know, you're standing on the shoulders of your friends and your coworkers.
You know, I have a little bit of a silly question for you this morning. I know we're starting with some introductions, then we'll transition to our good news and celebrations for the day. But can you give me the inside scoop? Like, I understand that you are doing so much for education. I get to consume a lot of the information that you share out publicly, like in blogs, like we've discussed. But what is like your day-to-day life look like? What's your schedule today? What is your role actually look like day in, day out? I'm sure it's different. It must be different every day. Is that true?
It's true. It is different every day, and it's much different during the pandemic. But
I'm sure.
Today I'm excited to meet with our Director of Testing and Research and Accountability. We have a monthly standing meeting, and we're going to be reflecting on last week when we visited six of our schools. To visit the schools, we did learning walks, and we're going to reflect on what we observed and what we learned from our principals at our six schools. Following that meeting, I'm meeting with our two executive directors for elementary and secondary education, and that's a weekly meeting. So I'm looking forward to learning from them and what they have planned for the next couple of weeks. And I also today have a groundbreaking ceremony this afternoon, so that's very exciting. We have a brand new middle school that will open in our school district. And our board members and our mayor and some other dignitaries will be there to have the groundbreaking ceremony. So that's exciting news when you're shoveling dirt on a brand new school and you know the impact that a brand new middle school will have on our youth.
Oh, I'm so excited. First of all, middle school. Y'all know that I have such a soft spot in my heart for a great middle school. But oh my gosh, a groundbreaking. That is, I know that the project's probably been underway for a very, very, very long time. But what a wonderful milestone in that development. How exciting. What a cool day to have.
It is a good day.
One of my favorite places I was able to visit, I was doing a good number of traveling for conferences and different events related to education in 2019. One of my favorite places, truly, I refer back to it all the time, was visiting Arkansas. It's one of my favorite states. I know that like for a lot of educators, they all have these beach states that they love and all these different places. But holy cow, when I went to Arkansas, the nicest people, the most incredible scenery and landscaping I loved. I'm dying to go back. So maybe as an excuse, I need to book a trip so I can come see the new middle school. That's going to be my in.
We would love to have you.
Be so fun. Everyone, we are so thrilled that you are here joining us for the Daily Drop-In. Thank you for all of the comments, the good morning messages, the positivity. Brie, I even saw your cheers. I appreciate you. We're in transition here into some celebration, some good news. So stick right with us. All right, you guys know how this works. We like to share good news and good news stories with you every single morning. Whether we do it very, very early on in the show or just to conclude, we love to be able to give you some tidbits to not only hopefully bring some positivity to your life, but to also provide you with some tidbits that you can build relationships and share with others. Stephen, I don't know about you, but I love an opportunity to celebrate anything. Like any opportunity to celebrate, I think is a good thing. So are you okay getting into some celebrations this morning?
I love celebrations. We have to celebrate, especially during the pandemic. We have to find the small wins in school and in life.
Absolutely. Well, there are a lot to celebrate, a lot of things to celebrate today. One is that it's World Lymphoma Awareness Day. So that is a wonderful opportunity for us to spread awareness and also discuss some really interesting topic with our students if we want to bring that celebration in today. It's also interesting, National Online Learning Day. I didn't even know that that was a day to celebrate. I feel like we've been living National Online Learning Day for the last 2 years. So I'm waiting for this holiday to end. But comical that September 15th, National Online Learning Day, has an opportunity too. The last day that I want to celebrate is one that was brought by our guest yesterday on Daily Drop-In, which was Jed Derryberry, and he wanted us to make sure that we celebrated. It is International Dot Day. And so, Stephen, I don't know if you've read the children's book, The Dot, but today is an opportunity to make your mark. And so there are so many different things we can do to celebrate that. I'd love to hear in the comments if you are planning to celebrate that. But a little tidbit here, it says International Dot Day is every September 15th. And today we start with a story about the dot. So if you haven't read The Dot, about making your mark, please go take on that children's book. It's a wonderful book. It's all about getting started, even when you're nervous. We were able to talk about it a lot on Daily Drop-In yesterday. So I encourage you all to go check that out. So lots of celebrations there, Stephen.
That's an exciting day. I didn't know it was Dot Day. I celebrated that in a few schools I worked in, but I didn't know that was today. I went to an Allen November conference at one point in my career, and we got to meet the author who wrote The Dot in Boston. And that was a great experience. And then afterward, all the educators got their books signed.
See, it sounds like you need to weave that in somehow to all the meetings, all the important celebrations you have today. You know, like find a way to weave in this children's book concept as an opportunity for you to bring International Dot Day to fruition. I love this. Some other things that I want to make sure we acknowledge is that for those of you celebrating Yom Kippur, tonight is Erev Yom Kippur. So Shana Tovah to those of you celebrating the Jewish New Year. The Jewish New Year is Rosh Hashanah, but it continues and will conclude with the big Yom Kippur kickoff, which will begin tonight and conclude tomorrow evening. So plenty, plenty, plenty to celebrate. You know, Stephen, the other thing we love to incorporate is a good news story. And I'm not sure about you, but I love sunflowers. This story has to do with sunflowers. Have you seen a good sunflower anytime recently?
I have not.
Sounds like we need to get some sunflowers out in your community. I think we could plant some sunflowers to add some sunshine. What do you think?
Yes.
This article that we'll be able to share with you this morning says that a huge field of sunflowers, over 100,000 sunflowers, were planted reading the word hope. So it goes through stunning drone pictures showing a huge field filled with over 100,000 sunflowers planted in a landscape to read the word hope. The breathtaking field on Andrew's farm in Scotland spans 1.5 acres, and it's the size of over 4 football pitches, which I assume is soccer for them over in Scotland. There's a really wonderful article kind of describing why they did this movement, how it's going to impact their community. But I thought it really lends itself to some great pictures and would allow any of you who are interested in bringing this story to your students or to your communities to kind of bring in the discussion of planting flowers, planting anything, and how that process kind of comes together. Because even the pictures right now, it was just recently planted. So there's no sunflowers yet, but I'm sure that they will be coming. Stephen, as we think through different ways to bring in good news stories, a lot of our focus is that it can spark conversation for us to build relationships, whether it be with our students, our staff, our leadership, anything in between. Do you have any suggestions on how you kind of like foster those relationships? You must go into different school buildings all the time. It must be hard to keep track of all those relationships you're trying to form.
One thing we really try to focus on in Fayetteville Public Schools is teacher leaders. Now, that doesn't mean we avoid counselors or other staff members, but when we think of teacher leaders, we want to tap into their expertise. Whether they've been teaching for 4 years or 50 years, we want to tap into the expertise. And before they leave our district, we want to kind of gather and curate the resources and their best practices that they've developed. When we think of best practices, sometimes we think of Marzano or we think of Wiggins and McTighe, but I also think of the best practices that exist in each school district. So we really invest in our teacher leaders, and we do that through curriculum review, but we also do that through focus groups. And we do that through, as you mentioned, visiting classrooms. And when we're in a classroom and maybe there are no students in the classroom, but there are four teachers meeting for a grade level team meeting, we can just ask questions like, how's it going this week? Or what are your biggest success stories? Or what's going on great in fourth grade this month? And by listening and by leading with questions, we find out some of our best strategies and our best answers. So I really enjoy our teacher leaders. And we don't think that you have five teacher leaders in a building. Our goal is to multiply teacher leaders, kind of like those sunflowers. So eventually we have teacher leaders in every grade level because the principal certainly can't do it on their own.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's really about building the culture. The culture isn't built by having one person at the top demanding the culture that should exist, but truly empowering those around you. And I love your focus on leading with questioning. I think that's truly a skill, Stephen, to be able to continue to foster that type of mindset and bring questions to facilitate that line of thinking, that line of empowerment.
Certainly is. It's not a skill I had in my first 20 years in education. It's a skill I've developed over the last few years. And I've read a lot of books on leading with questions. And you'll notice a theme with my blogs is usually a lot of questions. There's usually 4 or 5 questions. I think this week there was a blog that had 12 different topics with 12 questions. But I hope that by giving people questions, they can discover the teacher leaders and the expertise that exists in their own community and school district.
Well, and questioning does so much for us, right? This is a topic that we easily could say, oh yeah, we know questioning is good. Let's just keep doing it. But questioning provides not only the person asking the question, but also the person consuming and responding to it in some way, a lot of different opportunities. It allows others to share their expertise. It allows moments of reflection. I mean, it truly allows so many different elements to exist within a conversation when you add an element of a question. Does this passion that you have for questioning, is this always something you've carried in your career? Have you learned over time that this is the type of leader you strive to be?
It's something I've learned over time as a leader. I think early in your career as a principal or a young assistant principal, you want to prove to everybody that you have the answers. So when a teacher comes to you with a question, you want to give them a resource or an article, or you want to give them 5 answers. You want to be the problem solver. And over time, through growth and maturity, you realize that there are multiple people, multiple staff members, and there are multiple perspectives. So there are different ways to look at a problem. And that's very true during the COVID pandemic. You have to pivot constantly throughout a day. And so if you're not leading with questions, you may be operating on something that worked during traditional school times, but this is certainly not a traditional school year. So I certainly think that it's something that I've leaned into and grown into over time. And when you discover that there's more power in answers from others than in you always having the answer, I think it's empowering to the other people who you're leading and meeting with. It's also empowering to you as an educator, because I run into so many teachers and principals or department chairs who feel all this pressure and weight on their shoulders that they have to have all of the answers. And in reality, sometimes it's better to have a good question than to have the best answer.
You know, I know that you provide a lot of different questions in your blog. I love that you were able to bring up that theme, because it's evident in all the blogs that you've been able to provide, at least the ones that I've been able to read. But I wonder, is there a resource outside of obviously what you're putting out, but is there a resource that you feel like you started with when you were really committing to being a good leader through questioning? Was there typical resources that you were turning to help improve your skill in the ability to question?
Well, certainly early in my career as a classroom teacher, I was influenced by Wiggins and McTighe with Understanding by Design. And then eventually they wrote a book on essential questions. H. Lynn Erickson wrote a book on concept-based teaching and instruction, and she focused on essential questions. Recently, Allison Zamuda talks about questioning and habits of mind with Ben Akalik. So those are education leaders who have influenced my thoughts on curriculum design. And so if it works great for students, why not for adults? And over time, I've read books by John Maxwell and other leadership books. And it seems that there's a theme with these leadership books that over and over, they're coming back to leading with questions. So there are several books on Amazon about leading with questions that might not be educator books, but that's what a lot of people are doing in the corporate world. And I think in education, quite often, we've just based it, well, it's October. Let's roll out October PTA meeting and let's roll out the October faculty meeting. But we're living in this VUCA world and this volatile world and uncertain world. And during VUCA, what we have to do as educators is we have to ask more questions, because we're not going to have all of the same answers every October.
I love your focus on reaching out to books and other experts in the field that aren't in education, because the reality is that we can learn a lot, questioning being one of the many topics, a lot from others who may not work in the education space, but still use these strategies in other ways. And we're able to bring in those people into our network and truly utilize their expertise, we can better serve our student body. I love that you were able to recommend so many different resources there, both by educators and by, you know, people in the world that are just trying to do good work in a multitude of spaces. So Wednesday is all about recommendations. I know we're not in that segment yet, but holy cow, if you're looking for a new book, especially on focus on questioning, you just listed a bunch that I would encourage anybody to go check out. So I appreciate you being able to share those resources. We're going to transition here into a little bit further, deeper discussion into our theme this week, which is equity, inclusion, and really covering a full gamut of what we're trying to have educators think of this week. We've been able to touch on this theme on Monday and Tuesday, so I'm thrilled to continue the conversation this morning, Wednesday morning, September 15th. I know, Stephen, you also wrote a blog that is available at teachbetter.com that we'll be publishing very, very soon that also shares a lot of your insight on this. So we'll be able to get started with that in our brainstorm bank segment. So we'll be right back. All right, you friends know how this works. We have a brainstorm bank segment every single day, Monday through Friday on Daily Drop-In. It's our intentional moment to stop all conversation and say, hey, do you need anything? And this can be questions that you are thinking through in the classroom. I saw some questions posted in our private Facebook group over at teachbettergroup.com of people thinking through different ideas they were looking for a brainstorming partner for. We are going to continue our dialogue this week with our weekly theme. But of course, if you need anything, this is the time to muster up the courage to type that question in the comments or submit it later on today at teachbetter.com/daily drop-in to be able to share your voice so that we can talk through concepts that you need support on. You know, Stephen, I know that you recently wrote a blog for us. I just saw a little bit of the work being done on it this morning that's going to be publishing on the concept of equity and inclusion. Can you tell us a little bit about how you went about that and what we can expect from that text?
There's a lot going on in the field of K-12 education this year regarding these topics. School boards across the United States have had public comment from parents either for or against equity and inclusion. And that's just really been hard for me to understand. It's been hard for me to understand because I think most educators, when we entered the field of education, we just saw all public schools are open to all students. It would be equivalent to saying there's a public swimming pool, but now it's only open to certain kids or certain neighbors. Once it's closed off, it becomes a private pool. Same way with a public library or anything that's public. Once it's closed off to some groups of people or some students, then it becomes a private institution. So being a public school educator and having worked at the Arkansas Department of Education and the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction as a social studies coordinator, I was able to work with groups like Facing History and Ourselves, Colonial Williamsburg, and other social studies organizations that really shaped my early parts of my career and how I viewed education. But I've always viewed my role in public schools as helping all students, regardless of race, gender. And, you know, currently, I believe many places in the United States will be getting refugees from Afghanistan and other parts of the world. So even when someone comes in from another part of the world, we're open to students. And so we don't see one student or one demographic being excluded from schools. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions in the community and in the world right now about what equity means. People are starting to define it in their own ways. And I think that's dangerous when people start saying, well, a public school shouldn't talk about equity or a public school shouldn't be about inclusion. And I get it. There are different theories out there and different approaches that people have. And some people have misunderstandings about those as well. But what I think a school is about is all students and all families in a community. And if you're helping all students grow, then you're doing your job. I think the democracy that we have in the United States is based on the foundation of public schools. I don't think very many of us would be where we are today without public schools. So I certainly think that private schools and homeschool and charter schools have their role in our country. But as a public school advocate, I just really believed in equity and inclusion. And I believe that when we're talking to students, especially in social studies classes, if we start to erase some of this history, we're going to actually go backwards rather than forwards as a country.
Absolutely. And with your background in social studies and obviously your passion just for helping all people, all types of students, I assume that this was something that really hit home as it became a hot topic that not only was something that people were discussing, but really putting action towards trying to achieve. What was that experience like for you?
It is a hot topic. It's a hot topic with most general assemblies across all 50 states. It's a hot topic with school boards. And it's very challenging because quite often people are going to Facebook and they're going to social media now, and they're putting their thoughts out there about what the public school should be or what the public school should not teach. And I would much rather that people just come to the table and meet with teachers and principals and people like myself and share their concerns in person. But we've got this culture where people hide behind social media and they push their thoughts out there. And that's hurtful to teachers and principals to read online that the parents in their class don't like what they're teaching. I think as adults, we should just have an adult conversation, but that's one way that education has changed. When I was a classroom teacher, you had to have a phone call or a parent-teacher conference because that was the only way to communicate. And now people communicate with social media, and sometimes it can be very anger or hurtful towards the educators who are trying to teach the students. But I think that we have a really good public school system in our country. Do we have flaws? Certainly. But equity and inclusion is something that public schools are about. And it's something that we need to teach students because we're growing up in a world that is ever changing and students need to have multiple perspectives. So I think one thing that I've noticed as a former social studies consultant in two states is that a lot of the fire is coming from, well, that's not the way I learned U.S. history. Well, the way we learned U.S. history was traditionally one perspective. It was the author of the single textbook, And a lot of social studies teachers now are using primary sources from the Library of Congress and free resources from public and national libraries. And they're helping students to come up with their own conclusions. And they're teaching students to think critically, which they're going to have to do in today's multimedia society. And through those multiple perspectives, students are able to analyze history rather than have one author tell them this is how it really happened. And looking back on it, some of the things that we learned were factual, and some of the things we learned were very biased. So people say, let's return to the good old days with apple pie and George Washington. And some of those authors were very biased, and we just didn't know it as 8-year-old kids. But I certainly think U.S. history and world history are great places to teach these things. And I also think that our classroom teachers are doing a great job of making all students feel included, even when we have students come in from another country who don't speak English in the middle of the school year. I feel like our classroom teachers across the United States are really embracing all students, because when you're a public school, you're for every child.
There are so many different directions we can take this, Stephen. I would love to focus on the avenue of communication. I know that that was something that you touched on, this avenue of parents being able to kind of communicate through so many different outlets, and the value that exists to be able to pick up a phone and chat with somebody is so valuable. We'll actually be talking about communication again on Daily Drop, and it was a theme a few weeks ago. We'll be revisiting that theme here in about a week to be able to focus on how you're continuing to up your game for communication. But if you don't mind, I'd love to have you share your perspective on, yes, first of all, your celebration of teachers doing very well right now. And while we have areas to improve, celebrating the work that's currently being done, you know, you don't hear that very often. I love that you were able to touch on that. But as a leader, how are you able to either support others or foster the discussions yourself in having these conversations? I think that's been a theme that's been brought up this week of a lot of educators feeling very passionately that this should be something that is brought into schools and discussed so that we can all be learners. But sometimes it feels difficult to approach these topics.
It can be difficult, especially if you're a building principal. I think it's hard to lead those conversations because you're the supervisor. And so to ask people to be vulnerable, it's almost easier to get a neutral facilitator. That could be your director of professional learning or someone in your central office. That could be a professor at a local university. That could be someone via Zoom. I think you can have a good meeting via Zoom with an outside facilitator. But there are several people who have expertise even outside of education and leading these conversations. Almost every major corporation now, if you're located in a big city, has someone who is a director or the chief that leads these trainings for their company. So someone would probably be willing, they may even be a parent in your school district, to come in and be a neutral facilitator to facilitate these conversations. But one thing I learned in my last school district, and one thing I'm learning here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, is that it's not one and done. These conversations are deep, so you have to have ongoing conversations, and you have to create a safe space. And so that being said, how do you create a plan for continuous conversation? This is not back to school and then we're done talking about it. These are deep conversations, and you have to talk about instructional materials. You have to talk about how do teachers feel, how were teachers taught, because quite often we teach the way we were taught. If we had five great teachers who are our favorite, we're going to model the way they taught because they were our favorite teacher or they were our favorite professor at the university level. So there's a lot going on. And I think there are things that through learning together, Solution Tree has a book called Learning by Doing. It's about professional learning communities. But if you're focused on these topics, I think it's learning by doing. You teach, you reflect, you have a group conversation or a grade level team conversation. And then the next time you teach that unit, you may teach it differently, but you're constantly trying to improve as a human being and as a professional educator. And so that's what I like, is just the focus on continuous improvement for me as a leader and as a learner.
Absolutely. You know, Stephen, I received a few emails yesterday from educators who tuned into Daily Drop-In with Jed Derryberry that were reflecting on our conversation that we were able to have earlier this week. And to be honest, a few of the emails I got all focused on So where do you start, right? So what topic should I tackle first? What concept should I tackle first? I think something that you're highlighting today so far is just the act of getting started, wherever that kind of lands you, whether you bring somebody in or it's just a you know, water cooler conversation, is actually a step in the right direction. And the hope would be that that continues. So you don't need to be necessarily concerned about where you begin, because it's only one layer in a multitude of processes that you're going to go to work on yourself in these areas.
One of the best places I did early in my career as a social studies educator, I've mentioned it earlier on the Daily Drop-In, is Facing History and Ourselves. And that's still an organization that provides professional development. I've worked with them in Arkansas and in North Carolina, the two states where I've worked. And I've worked with them in week-long institutes, and I've also worked with them on three-day institutes. But the best experience I had was a week-long institute in Memphis, Tennessee. We met with people who marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. We met with bystanders, upstanders, police officers, people who are witnesses to history and who talked about and reflected on what they witnessed and maybe why they were a bystander or why they chose to march. And we heard from their stories. I've also met with Holocaust survivors through Facing History and Ourselves. And several of those people are getting older, and it's getting harder and harder to find a Holocaust survivor for your classroom to come and give a speech. But I've met with different people who have experienced history. In North Carolina, I had a unique experience where we hosted over 1,000 teachers at the North Carolina Museum of History with the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. And we had three of the living members of the Greensboro Four on a panel discussion. And we had an evening where we got to hear from them about why they chose at that moment as college students to sit at a lunch counter in North Carolina, and hearing their experiences as adults, reflecting on when they were college students and why they made that choice. I just don't see how you can't be passionate about equity and inclusion after you meet people who at that point in their life as college students made a courageous choice. And so I've had a lot of opportunities to either meet people one-on-one who experienced the civil rights movement or who have made choices. This past summer, my daughter and I went through the southern part of the United States. We had a flight canceled and we were driving back home, and we went to the bridge where Dr. King and John Lewis marched. And that was the first time I'd ever been there. I taught about it as a social studies teacher, but to go there with my college age daughter and to walk across the bridge with her and to talk about the civil rights movement, that was a very moving time and a great father-daughter moment that we'll never forget. And when you go to sites and you go to historic places, you're able to really think, this is what it's about. This is what it means to be a public school educator. Other people have sacrificed and have made decisions at young ages in their life so other people can have opportunity. So that was a great moment that my daughter and I got to share this summer.
What an incredible moment and a wonderful recommendation for the organization you were able to mention, I know, previously. And then again, of full of resources for people to go and explore. Do you mind sharing the name of that group again?
Facing History and Ourselves. And Teaching Tolerance is another one, but I think they recently changed their name. I can't remember if that's their new name or their old name.
Okay. Yeah, no, I know. I'm very aware of that group. So now it's good to add the other one to my library as well of resources that I need to go and continue to explore.
And the National Council for Social Studies would be another excellent one that could give several other organizations. So National Council for Social Studies, and then most states have a State Council for Social Studies. And then also we were working with our English Language Arts K-12 curriculum design, and we worked with the National Councils of Teachers of English. And they have position statements and they have resources to support teachers who are developing curriculum and who are analyzing what best practices are according to the NCTE. So NCTE and NCSS are both national organizations that have supported me as a curriculum leader.
Oh my gosh, Stephen, I so appreciate you are a wealth of knowledge that isn't just to provide people food for thought, but resources to keep exploring. That is a huge strength that I can not only tell you have right now, but also something that I truly admire in as many people that I can pull into my bubble as possible, is people that truly choose to continue to be learners. It's not just about getting one idea and running with it, but truly taking the time to surround yourself with research and resources that allow us to be learners and to be better, not just today, but every day. And so I so appreciate you bringing that to this conversation. I know that a lot of people are going to need to listen back to this dialogue and write down all the books and all the organizations that you've been able to share so they can continue to explore. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
We look at a few different things, Stephen, I know that you were able to write a blog for us. I know this is clearly a passion project for you, that you're going to continue to be an advocate for all types of learners. Is there one takeaway that either maybe you included in your blog or maybe you didn't, but one takeaway that you'd like for us to consider as we continue this week specifically to really have some open and honest dialogue about equity and inclusion that you want our listeners to consider throughout their week?
I think every day when we walk into our school as a teacher or administrator or staff member, we have the opportunity to be a bystander or an upstander. A bystander can stand by and watch and observe and say, that's the way we've always done things, or, hey, it worked for last year's kids, it'll probably work for this year's class. A bystander can watch and observe things that might have inequities and say, hey, I'm okay with that. A bystander just allows it to happen. They don't speak up. They don't ask questions. They don't challenge a status quo. They don't try to change board policy. An upstander is someone who walks into the school each day with a different lens. And the lens of an upstander is, how can I support all students? Who do I need to be in this classroom today for all of my learners? Are all of my learners having the same access to student clubs? Are all of the learners having access to travel? Maybe there's a competition, a robotics competition this Saturday, but the parents have to take their own kids. That's an equity issue. We quite often think of equity through race, but it's much deeper than just race. During the COVID pandemic, there was a highlight on equity. So if you missed it, go back and reflect on what happened over the past 12 months, and I doubt any educator missed it. And look at when we sent students home for online or remote learning. How many students had Wi-Fi? All of a sudden, teachers were saying, I was giving kids zeros on homework all these years because they weren't turning in their homework, but all the homework was in Google Classroom. So quite often what we find out is that, you know, we're assigning students low grades or zeros, and they don't have access to the internet. So the pandemic did give us an opportunity to push out and look from the 100,000 feet view and analyze where we have inequities in our schools. So sometimes it's about race, sometimes it's about grading practices, but other times it's about internet connectivity and what goes on in the home. So how can we support all learners every day? And as an upstander, that's really our role. It's not really being some outlier that's really out there and crazy with their hair on fire. It's just walking into school, because when you entered this field, you said, I have a calling. I have a calling to help children and youth. And your calling today is to be an upstander in your school. You can't change everything about your school district. You can't change every board policy. There are things out of your control. But be an upstander for the kids who you have an influence over, and be an upstander for teachers and staff.
Oh, Steve, what an incredible call to action that you just provided us with, not only the reflection of a bystander versus an upstander, which I know Andrea commented she so appreciated the innate difference between those two concepts, but the ability for us to choose to be a part of the solution. So incredibly important. We are going to be right back with some recommendations we love as we conclude our Wednesday morning conversation. But holy cow, do we recommend a lot of stuff. So keep your phone open as we wrap up our daily drop-in conversation. You know, Stephen, you have filled this daily drop-in with recommendations. And it's perfect that you were here on a Wednesday, because on Wednesdays, we specifically take a moment to say, hey, if you're looking to further your exploration, whether it be in this topic or in other things that are really passion projects for you, go choose to do that. Sometimes we recommend podcasts or journal articles or books, everything in between. You've been able to provide us with not only books, but also organizations that are continuously supporting the educators that exist in our world, and also therefore the students that exist that we continue to serve. Stephen, if you had to identify maybe your favorite text for questioning, I know you provided so many suggestions already. You also provided us with a few different organizations to begin our journey in looking for really valuable resources and testimonials from people involved in history. If I'm an educator and I just listen to you list off like six different things, 10 different things in today, would you have an ability to recommend one, even if it's a resource that you haven't recommended yet, but one thing that you're like, if you take nothing else away from today, go look at this resource because it will lead you to so many more things?
A book on questioning. It was early. You caught me early this morning, caught me off guard with the book recommendations, but it's on my shelf. It's called The Book of Beautiful Questions. The Book of Beautiful Questions is not an education book. Every chapter has about 50 to 100 questions that you can lead at any point in your career, at any level you're at in education. So The Book of Beautiful Questions is a recommendation. And also another organization I haven't dropped or mentioned this morning is ASCD. I've been a member for over 20 years, and ASCD will continue to push your thinking. The topics related to equity and inclusion. They will have articles and resources and books. If you're a member, you get free books. And I highly recommend becoming a member of ASCD because it's really influenced me as a teacher, as a principal, and now as an assistant superintendent.
Oh, I'm so appreciative that you shared that shout out, ASCD. We have so many incredible friends over there. The work that they are doing is outstanding. We are very good friends with people that not only contribute their knowledge, their research, their mind, but also that are active on their board and continue to push to enhance that community. So big shout out to ASCD, the work they're doing. We actually share their content constantly. If you guys go follow Teach Better Team on social media, we are really kind of constantly sharing our friends' work, and ASCD is one of the many. So wonderful, wonderful highlight there, Stephen. The other thing that I would love to highlight to our incredible network here, for those of you that were emailing me, reaching out, some clarification on Jed Derryberry's books that he mentioned yesterday. He was able to come live with us and share so many children's books. I got so many messages about people wanting to connect with him. So if you haven't done that, please do so. I also wanted to have an additional moment, if you don't mind, Stephen, an additional moment to highlight that Jed's books that he referenced and that he wrote are not children's books. They are for educators. So depending on what you're looking to explore, we've given you so many resources today. A highlight really quick on The Playful Classroom and The Courageous Classroom. Those are teacher texts that we are encouraging each and every one of you, if you're looking to connect with those resources that were shared yesterday as well. Those, I have the Amazon links actually right in front of me. They're obviously long. I'm not going to read them to you. But on Amazon, if you search The Playful Classroom and The Courageous Classroom by Jed Derryberry, you're going to find that those are not only incredible resources for you to go explore, but also resources that truly are for educators. They're not quick little read, you know, classroom books, but they're actual implementation dialogue around how you can incorporate play into your classroom. So really, really, really good dialogue yesterday and today, Stephen. You've been able to provide so much value, food for thought to our network, and I really appreciate that about you.
Thank you so much, Ray. I really appreciate the opportunity to have a platform to share my blogs and my articles. So thank you for the platform.
For sure. And as we wrap up here, Stephen, I'd love for you to take a moment to share how people can connect with you. I think it's really important that our community continues to add people to their network. You've been able to share so many resources for them to do that, so many food for thought ideas for them to do that. Would you mind sharing how they can stay connected to you? Maybe Twitter or an email, whatever's best for you.
The best way to connect with me as a connected educator is either through Voxer or Twitter. On Voxer, it's S. Weber, S-W-E-B-E-R. And at Twitter, it's at Curriculum Blog. And on my curriculum, on my Twitter feed, I share a lot about curriculum, leadership, articles, resources I write, resources other educators write. And as I've mentioned today, books and leadership articles outside of education. So I'd be happy to follow you on Twitter and happy to connect through Voxer or Twitter.
And remember, friends, it's not just about you choosing to connect with a new person in and add them into your PLN, but also choose to connect others in your community. You know, Stephen has brought up not only so many resources for us to explore, but his focus continues to be on enhancing all educators' ability to be strong leaders, strong question asking, you know, representatives in our community. And if you have a friend who you think would really benefit from connecting with Stephen, make sure that you connect them as well. That's an incredible responsibility that we have to not only connect ourselves with good people, but choose to connect others with good people. So Stephen, I'm so excited for our community to continue to engage with you. Thank you so much for joining Daily Drop-In this morning.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
So good. For all of you that are here with us live, or even if you're listening to this after the fact on Teach Better Talk podcast, thank you for being here. We hope you enjoy your final sips of your coffee this morning. It is Wednesday, September 15th, and we know that you're going to have an incredible day in front of you. Please let us know if you need anything. We are always here for you, and we will see you back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Eastern live for Daily Drop-In on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. So have a wonderful day, guys. Thanks for all that you do. See you later.